Keep in touch with the Wolf Connection podcast on our Instagram handle at the Wolf Connection Pod, or email us your questions, comments, and guest ideas to podcast@wolfconnection.org. Thank you for your support, and howls to you all. Welcome to the Wolf Connection podcast. I'm your host, John Calvin.
Okay, so we're in the middle of day two of the Yellowstone Wolf Summit. Myself and Steven here with the executive director of Wyoming Wildlife Advocates, Kristen Combs. She presented yesterday. But Kristen, just give us a little bit about how you're feeling about the summit overall, just where we are, any individuals that you've been talking with, you know, what was it like yesterday to present? How's everything going in that regard for you?
Let me just tell you, this has been one of the most amazing and best conferences that I've ever been to. I think it's a combination of like being from the pandemic for so long and being like, you know, not being face to face and now being back with all of these incredible, passionate people that are so excited about the same things that I'm excited about. And yeah, it's just been phenomenal. And seeing people come from all over the United States to be here just to speak for wolves and to help wolves has been so wonderful. I feel very honored and privileged to have been able to present Wyoming's kind of story of wolves right now and how things are going there. And there was a million things that I forgot to say, of course. But I really, you know, I'm glad that I could educate people on things in Wyoming. I think you know, a lot of people are really focused on Idaho and Montana right now, and Wyoming kind of gets forgot about. But we are, you know, having just the same issues as everybody else is, where wolves are classified as a predator and are killed. And we only have, you know, less than 400 wolves in a state that is 97,000 square miles. So I'm glad I could bring that kind of, you know, story to everybody yesterday. And it really dovetails in with what's happening in Colorado. I mean, we're reintroducing wolves in Colorado because they have not been able to make it there from Wyoming because they walk outside of Yellowstone and you know, the northwest corner of the part of the state, and they're shot. So, and I still remain concerned about wolves that are going to cross over from Colorado to Wyoming because they're in a free-for-all zone and can be killed. And so I'm sure that some will be killed. Our governor has already said that he will not permit any Wyoming wolves to be taken to Colorado for reintroduction efforts. So there's going to be some political, you know, maneuvering with that for sure.
We haven't talked about it in a long time, but just remind people of that zone that's right over the Colorado-Wyoming border. Like, what's the deal there? What are the regulations? Why is it so hard for a wolf to make it through that area into Colorado? And then a lot of times they end up going back up into it. They don't travel further into Colorado, but just describe people that area and why it's such a specific issue.
Yeah, so everything but the northwest corner of the state and a very small part of the northwest corner of the state, wolves are classified as a predator. So you don't need a license. There's no bag limits. There's no limits on when you can kill them or how. The legislature just passed a law where you can now use thermal imaging and night vision to hunt them on public lands and private lands. So there's just very little chance that a wolf has to survive. And we've seen that. There's only been a few dispersing wolves that have ever made it out of out of Wyoming, and they end up getting killed. Every single one of them has ended up dead. So, the fact that the Department of Agriculture is the one who manages, quote unquote, manages wolves in most of the state of Wyoming.
Can you use thermal imaging for any other species in the state?
Predators, no. Any other predators, you can. So predators are like a coyote, wolf.
Even bears?
No, not for bears.
They're not a true predator. They're not classified as predators.
No, they're classified as a big game animal. So predators are raccoon, skunk, red fox, jackrabbit, porcupine, coyote, and wolf. I know. So basically it's like species that the state has said we don't care what happens to them. And in fact, if you call, I also am a wildlife rehabber, and I get calls from people that are like, yeah, there was a hit fox on the road. I called the Game and Fish Department and they said there's nothing we can do with it. So that's frustrating, that they're literally like throwaway species. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like just they're vermin and nobody cares about them.
It's just why was there such this shift into getting rid of fair chase, equitable hunting? Because we heard Dave Stalling have an incredible presentation about the ethical hunting standard has really plummeted. And it's become really more of that safari club type. When did you see it? We probably talked about this on the last time we had you on, but why the shift more, in these states, Wyoming, that you can speak to, has really shifted to this type of hunt and classifying these animals, like you say, as vermin or as disposable species?
I really appreciated what Dave had to say about hunting and the ethics within that. And, I think everything really does boil down to the commercialization and industrialization of hunting. We've got these huge corporations that are making millions and millions of dollars off of hunting equipment. There's night vision goggles that are specifically for coyote hunting or wolf hunting in the state. There's, organizations and industries that just produce like coyote calling equipment, to quote unquote call them in for shooting them. So, it really comes back to money, I think, is really the bottom line. And there are a lot of ethical hunters out there for sure. In Wyoming, I mean, at least in my corner of the state, there are, for sure. And I have a lot of friends that are very ethical hunters, more of the Leopoldian hunters, kind of like Dave was talking about. They like unfortunately don't feel compelled to like stand up and like say any. They don't like want to like form a group or whatever. They just want to go out and hunt their elk and then fill their freezer and move on. It's not. They don't want somebody coming at them and talking to them or whatever. So. I understand that it's frustrating though that there is not more of an ostracization of the non-Leopoldian hunters and the industrialization of it. That's frustrating that is not why is this just getting a free pass? This very unethical non-fair chase hunting, and it's really just so much a part of the culture, and it's becoming even more ingrained into the culture.
I mean, when you look at the summit as a whole, because we're talking about really the negative stuff that's happening. What are you getting out of so far? Because we're only a day and a half in about the outreach and the positive and the balance that's starting to come to this. Because we said this just when we spoke with Garrick, I thought Cam Sholley kicked off everything really well, just in his approach, his balance, the way that he's perceiving the way forward is really about communication and really about bringing people together. How do you feel about that type of communication that's happening, the people in this room? I think everyone in here doesn't agree on probably everything that's being said, but having those lines of communication open and being able to speak your mind and also co-mingle with everyone that's here, because it's such a it's an open group, it seems.
Yeah, no, I think that you're exactly right about that. I was incredibly really inspired by Casey York and Mark Cook speaking about their time in the legislature and, making those connections with different legislators and having those relationships. It's not easy. That is the hard work. That is the tough stuff that you got to go and you have to, you got to set aside your own personal comforts and get out of that and be like, okay, I'm going to talk to this person that I'm diametrically opposed to. But we're going to try to find some common ground, and I'm going to at least maybe help them see my viewpoint too. And I mean, it's tough work. I've been at the legislature down in Wyoming, and it's so not my thing. It's weird. It's like you've got to catch people in the hallway and like try to have dinners with people and go to these social events. And it's not most people's forte. But that's where the policy work happens, and that's where the change happens. And I think that, anytime that we can sit down and have a conversation, it's the same with me and, Ken Mills from Game and Fish Department. Like, he and I, we have conversations all the time about different things, and we talk about things, and we try to understand each other's viewpoints. And, there's things that we don't agree on, but we actually come to the conclusion that, hey, we do agree on a lot. And, we're all here for the same reason, because we love wildlife and we want to see, you know, positive things happen for wildlife and conservation. So it's, yeah, I'm glad that I feel like the conference has been a good blend of here's the reality of what's happening, and then also like here's what you can do, or here's the hope for the future to change things. And Cam Shally was just amazing yesterday morning. He's been such a great leader, and I know he's walking a very fine tightrope of public policy and trying to keep, you know, everybody happy, and he has to work within the bounds of his job. But I really do feel like he's done an incredible job of speaking out when he can and trying to stand up for what he knows is right.
Yeah, I was thinking that when he was speaking, just how it must be so invigorating and inspiring to be on that guy's team. He just really charges you up. He really charges you up. But I was also thinking about what you were saying 2 minutes ago about how you don't want to go to these commission meetings sometimes, but you go. And just how many of you are actually doing that. Like, just, it's so easy to not do things you don't want to do.
Yep.
Especially things that are that hard. And just,
sure,
you got to get up and you got to go somewhere you don't want to go and talk to people who don't agree with you. And you got to do it over and over again. And that's, like, like I was saying yesterday to Garrick Dutcher, is you guys just have no quit, man. It's like, you're obviously tired. Like, everyone's obviously freaking tired, you know? But you're still
that's an understatement,
going
sure
to do these things that you don't want to do with people who don't want to listen to what you have to say, and you just keep going to them. It's just, it's an incredible community. And, I wonder how many more people, because of these kinds of events, are going to end up going to these commission meetings and doing the things they don't
want to
do.
I certainly hope more. We really need, especially in Wyoming, and Casey and Mark deal with the same thing. They're there at the commission meeting. And it's like them and, you know, like four other trappers sitting on the other side. Like, wow. You know,
it's so wild.
If I'm there by myself, they just listen to me. You know, I'm not going to carry the same weight that is, you know, 50 of us are going to have, or 10 of us are going to even have. So it's really important for people to attend those meetings. And in Wyoming, you can do it virtually even. So you don't even have to go. It's such a big state. It's hard to get around. Yeah, you can attend virtually and speak up. So I encourage everybody to do that, please.
That's really cool to know that that's happening.
Yeah, like, just go to the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission. Just look up Wyoming Game and Fish Commission, and you'll see the meeting dates on there, and there's a link for you to participate. So I cannot say enough about how important that is for people to show up. And I think somebody mentioned that yesterday of, like, showing up. That's the bottom line of where we're at right now.
Yeah, you're the second person to say this is, like, an unusually well put together.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's just been such a phenomenal experience.
You know, we've only been to a few of them. John's been to three, I've been to two. And it's like, I don't have anything to compare it to. But I mean, our for example, like, we've had two native voices, well, only one in person, but two native voices.
Yeah.
Is that usual for?
Sometimes, yeah. I think it's becoming more and more common as the tribes are trying to, you know, assert their treaty rights and try and find their place in politics and figure out how to, you know, communicate with colonialism and just, you know, work within the system that we have, which is so diametrically different than theirs. So, you know, I mean, like Lance, I just had an amazing, I just loved listening to him speak, and I'm so happy that, like, he has taken that, once again, like, taken that huge step outside of his comfort zone to be a politician now and try to make a change and bring change for his people and also, you know, wildlife at the same time. I don't know. I think it's just, I've been personally inspired by so many people here, and I just feel like this is where I get my batteries recharged. And, you know, this is, now I can, like, come out of this and, like, be like, let's go do this.
I'm going to do it. It's go time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the inspiration level, like you said, Lance Forrestar, I mean, unbelievable. I spoke with him, and we're going to talk with him down the line and have a longer form podcast with him. But even the words that Julie Argyle was speaking for John Potter, who couldn't be here because of a passing in his family. And it's really just getting back to those traditional roots about how we really are interconnected with wildlife and getting back to the primal levels of, you know, how we evolve together. And I think that's something that I really like too, that was it's really being pushed to the forefront about how we can get back to those ways to understanding how to coexist, getting into conservation. You mentioned something before that I want to touch on too. You know, you and Ken Mills being on the stage, and knowing Ken from Minnesota when I was at the symposium, it really is wonderful to see two, you know, and I think you guys aren't as opposed, and you even said it, not as opposed as you would think. And just having those two sides, being able to talk about these things and reach a mutual agreement about this is really how we feel and how we want to this is how we want it to go. And I think that's really a strong push that Mark and Kim make, Wolves of the Rockies make, all of you guys make, to reach across the aisle. And I think Garrick said it yesterday, which is perfect, dissolving the aisle. So that it's really just...
Exactly.
It's one big group in the middle.
Yep. I mean, and I think that if we could do that more, there's a situation where we just have to, like, you know, think about how can we get back more to the middle? You know, I mean, it's you're not going to get everything that you want all the time, obviously, and there's got to be compromise, and I think that's one of the things that's missing in our society today. There's these, like, extreme ends, and, you know, I think right now in Wyoming especially, the extreme is ruling the roost and is, you know, I mean, just like the fact that the Department of Agriculture, you know, controls wolf management in the state. So basically, like, that extreme has become the norm, but obviously Ken and I can sit down and have a conversation and we're like, oh yeah, we agree on that, and we agree on that, and we agree on that. And it's these extreme ends that are not willing to say that, not willing to sort of come to a realization that, like, oh, there is a lot of common ground here. So yeah, any way that we can, like, I love that term of, like, dissolving the aisle. That's so great, because really, I mean, yeah, we're all people here on earth trying to do the right thing and somehow exist, you know, coexist with wildlife, and hopefully that's where we get to eventually. Yeah.
I mean, what's the thing so far for you that is, obviously a lot of things have resonated, clearly, we were talking about, but is there anything in particular so far that stuck out? Is there anything for the last day that you're waiting for? Like, what's something that's, like you said, you're getting your batteries recharged. So what's the thing that, you know, you were speaking with a young college student who's studying biology, another John, oddly enough. So what's the thing that you've seen that's really gotten you, you know, again, like that recharging and knowing that what you're doing is mattering to a degree?
I mean, every single person in this room right now is, like, such an inspiration. And when I go to commission meetings, I imagine, like, everybody's behind me. Everyone's standing here with me, you know, like, I'm not just speaking for myself. I'm speaking for all these people that are really passionate about wolves. And for every person that's in this room, there's 100 more out there. That I found really inspirational. I've also found Joanna, her presentations have been really inspiring and really have got me thinking. You know, we have a situation in Wyoming where we have grizzly bears that are close to the road and are kind of getting into this, like, sort of habituated state, I would guess you would call it, of being near people and people being near bears. And I really got to thinking today about her presentation about, you know, it's these bold individuals that kind of are willing to go toward people or be more present with people. And a lot of times, like, that gets spun in a very negative way of, like, oh, we have these, you know, animals that are habituated and they're being aggressive and whatever. But you're seeing just the opposite happen, especially in Grand Teton National Park and even in Jackson, of, like, bears are coming in and they are living close to people. And we're not having, like, tons of I mean, even though bears are getting into foods, it's not like we're, you know, people are being mauled every single day by a bear there. I mean, there's no maulings. And so that in itself, I'm curious about, like, how that's going to inform wildlife management moving forward. And I really am hopeful that looking at on the individual animal level and these, like, ambassador animals, how that can help, like, inform wildlife management moving forward and hopefully change it over time, so that instead of thinking of it as, like, this really negative thing, oh, well, maybe we actually can get a little bit closer with wildlife and live with them without having, you know, really negative impacts to either species.
Yeah, I was thinking about asking Doug that a little bit later, actually, the 5 minutes we were talking about, because it is pretty odd that people here are so close to bears, and there's not a lot of problems with bears.
Exactly.
We saw a grizzly yesterday, and we went into the park for a minute, and there were about 30 cars around this bear, and it does make you uncomfortable a little bit, because it's odd to see.
Sure.
You know, it's, like, odd to see metal and a bear, like, so much metal and a bear right there, and it's just a weird combination of things. But she didn't even turn around. She just kept eating and didn't turn around. And I was thinking to myself, like, I wonder what this is about, because...
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with, like, the threatening level that people are presenting, too. I mean, here, the animals know that there's not going to be any harm come to them. Yeah. Like, you know,
they're totally comfortable.
Right. They're just comfortable with people. And that is a special relationship that I think could be fostered in more places. I mean, it's similar to the way that coyotes have kind of existed in cities. I mean, they're like, okay, if I just go about my business and do whatever, people don't, you know, I'm not bothered by me. So it is interesting to think about, on the individual animal level and then like just how that factors into wildlife management.
I know, it's really wild. We've been talking about it since yesterday. Well, I only have two more sentiments, but then I'll hand it to John to go ahead. But you were talking about the middle, and you were mentioning the quote that was said yesterday, dissolving the middle. I think the important thing about being in the middle is actually that if you're not in the middle, you're in some kind of survival mode. It's like fight or flight mode. Like you can't relax. We're not thinking clearly when we're not in the middle. And that's the importance of finding your way to the middle, is that it demonstrates that your heart is open to different possibilities and different things and different ways of life. And that's an important place to be. And it just proves that you're not in survival mode, that you're thinking clearly about things. And we definitely need to try our best to get there.
I can't agree more. I think that it's we just all have to be open to hearing more things, hearing the inconvenient truths that we don't want to hear, or hearing the things that we have been, something that is opposed to what we've been told our whole life. You know, I mean, this wonderful college student I was just talking to told me that he grew up hating wolves, and his whole family was an anti-wolf family, and he actually has been able to change. Not only he has changed himself, his mom and his grandparents have also changed because of the way he feels. And I told him how incredible that is.
That's
because
wild.
Once somebody has a value ingrained into them and you're like middle-aged, you pretty much can't change that person's, you know, point of view. It's
going
to take a lot, right? And it takes a very open-minded, educated person to do that. That is really, I mean, I was just really blown away by the fact that, I know,
that.
Right? You really should, because it's quite a story.
But my last thing was, when we were listening to the John Potter audio, obviously, us being from Wolf Connection, we do all different kinds of ceremony all the time for different reasons. And I was thinking, we should really try to arrange that for the Colorado reintroductions. Like, can we get a hold of a native speaker who can hold some kind of legitimate ceremony before the release of Colorado wolves somewhere? Because we've been in touch with CPW, so we'll see. Maybe we can arrange that kind of thing. But if anyone who's listening, if that inspires you to anybody you know, or you can think of someone who might be willing to do that kind of ceremony. I can't say for sure they don't already have somebody lined up, but it's definitely not, they're not going to be released in parks, right? So it may be the connection's not there, but if you know anyone we can communicate with that can host some kind of native ceremony before these releases, we may be in the area, we may be there for the happenings of these things, we don't know, but we're trying. So if anyone's listening and can help us facilitate that, definitely reach out to us.
I mean, for you, Chris, and lastly for me, and again, thank you for spending just a few minutes with us, more a few minutes, but I mean, lastly for you, what's, just remind everybody, one, how they can find you, connect with Wyoming Wildlife Advocates, and then just something you want to tell everybody who's not here, because it's, you know, again, as large as the group is, it could always be larger, so just something that you would want anybody to know that's not here about, you know, from your perspective, what you're seeing, and just moving forward in, you know, in these sort of summits and things like that.
Certainly. In a good way, you can go to our website. It's wildwild.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You know, a lot of times I'll put alerts out there if there's times to comment on things like that, different policy changes and things. So, Wyoming Wildlife Advocates, check us out online. Apply or sign up for our newsletter. That's a great way, because I usually try to provide a lot of updates and let people know what's happening in Wyoming with wolves and grizzlies and other large carnivores and other animals that we care about. And so, and you know, I think if you're not here, I almost can't put into words like how inspiring it has been to be around all these other people who are so incredibly passionate. And if you're not here, just know you're not alone. There's so many people out here that really care about wolves, really care about healthy ecosystems, care about biodiversity, care about the extinction crisis that we're in. And we are stronger together, and we all need to keep each other going and support each other. And follow Wolves of the Rockies, follow Trap Free Montana, follow these groups that are here on the ground. They're going to be the ones that are going to let you know what's happening. And because it's a lot. It's, you know, like I live this every day, and I forget sometimes that people don't know I don't know what they don't know, because there's so much to it. And every single person that has spoken or that is presented is somebody you can pick up the phone and call. Like, you know, if you need to figure out what's going on in Montana about wolves or whatever, you can call Casey York anytime. Yeah. You know, sorry, Casey, if I just flooded your voicemail box. But, you know, it's just we're all open, and we are here because we're passionate and we're compassionate about this. And, yeah, we want to help other people be on the bus, too, and help, like, you know, find ways to become active in advocacy and education.
I know I said that was my last thing, but I lied. Well, I'm connecting the dots with what you just said, where you said, you know, we're not alone, and, you know, we know you're talking to folks who don't know that there's communities like this. But connecting the dots between that and Dave's speech, I also want to reach out to a different type of community that we need more partnership with, and that is the hunting community. If you're the type of ethical hunter that also believes in the reintroduction of predators, or also believes that predators have a place on the landscape, or just believes in whole ecosystems with the full host of predators, and you still find it hard, like Dave was saying, to be a part of either group because everyone has an issue with your lifestyle, but you are somewhere in the middle there, and maybe you're interested in coming to events like this, you know, you would be 100% welcome, and there are a handful or more folks here who would understand where you're coming from, me being one of them. I understand that conflict. And you definitely have a place in this community. And so if that sounds like you, or you know someone who might be like that, you know, definitely have them follow our Instagram page, reach out to us, listen to this podcast. We keep people up to date with events like this, and you should definitely consider coming to one and meeting people and discussing these, you know, incredibly challenging concepts. And you're welcome in this space as well.
That just gave me a good reminder to start bugging my hunting friends to get involved.
100%, yeah. Kristen Combs, again, thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you do, continuing to do these things for Wyoming, and really reaching across the aisle and being a voice for the voiceless and all the things that you do. So thanks for sharing time with us. And I can't wait to enjoy the rest of the summit with you and everybody else. So thanks again for spending time with Stephen. Well,
thank you so much for having me again. I enjoy it every time.
Yeah, absolutely. How's y'all out there? Stephen and I will continue with more stuff from the Yellowstone Wolf Summit. See you guys later.
Bye. Looking for more information about Wolf Connection or the podcast? Please visit our website at wolfconnection.org, where you can donate, sponsor a wolf, or become a volunteer.